corresponding closure, and then there's a motion specific to this, which will be discussed afterward. Third was to revise the carryover provisions. The committee received a presentation from the regional office about the current carryover provisions and the way things will be changing going forward, and offered to the committee that if there was anything they wanted to work through, that it would suggested that any of those revisions be done through Framework 53. The next one is to create a rollover provision for specifications. The reason why this has come up is because we are scheduled to have all of the groundfish stocks assessed next year in an update in September. And because of the timing of those assessments, it's likely that we'll not be able to get specifications in place in time for fishing year 2016. So the question is, what do you do in that situation where you don't have specifications in time for the fishing year? We don't have any kind of provision right now in the groundfish fishery that would let us, for example, take the previous year's ACL and roll it over for 1 year or for a period of time. So that discussion started last week, and the committee suggested keeping that in the framework. There was some discussion also, and there'll be a motion on this, I believe, that would address some concerns about potentially targeting smaller fish, and there was a discussion at the enforcement committee, I believe, last week as well on potential changes to gear regulations to address these concerns. And last on the list is a placeholder that regional office staff and council staff have been talking about how the recreational management measures process could be improved. And we didn't have anything right now that we could put forward, but we wanted to have a placeholder should something develop over the summer that would improve that process for how AMs are implemented for the recreational fishery. And with that, that concludes my presentation. Oh, I'm sorry, one more slide. I lied. And today, really, your purpose is to discuss this list of recommended items and then initiate the framework. And I'm just going to go back to the previous slide, maybe, so that – go back one. And I'll leave that one on the board.
Thank you for the short presentation, Jamie. Questions from the council? Mike?
Yes. One of the items is create a rollover provision for specifications. Now, I guess I need some clarification on this. My recollection is that the norm was to basically be setting an ACL for 2 years, but actually setting it for three, recognizing that it might not get changed, the intent being two, but setting it for three. Are we talking about rolling over into that third year or rolling over into a fourth year beyond the third year?
Talking about the fourth year. And it has to do with when the groundfish updates will likely occur next year. If they were scheduled for earlier in the year, this problem might not be taking place.
Mike?
I was afraid that was the answer. And I guess we don't have any choice because we have to do something. But I do recall that when this came up when I was an SSC member, there was a pretty strong message from the SSC that the SSC wasn't comfortable defending these third-year ACLs, that those were projections gone too far, and that, in fact, when we, on another occasion, rolled over into the third year, the SSC wouldn't really comment on whether those were scientifically the best advice or not. They just acknowledged they were what they were. Now we're even going beyond that, which to me, as I say, I don't know of any alternative, and that's where we are. But this is a pretty unfortunate situation in terms of basing these measures on the most defensible science. Thank you.
Sue.
My understanding is a temporary rollover until we got an action in place, right? So if May 1 was delayed, you know, we could potentially roll over the last year's ACL until we were able to get the action in place, say, you know, June 1st instead of May 1st. So it would be replaced soon after the rollover, isn't it? That was my understanding anyways.
I think that makes sense. I think there's some issues that are going to be need to be addressed. For instance, you know, what if that fourth year that you're rolling over is much higher than what your specifications would be suggested for that actual year? So I think there's some things that the committee is going to have to really work through.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question for Janie related to the subcomponents that are being proposed. So, Jamie, has there been any consideration relative to observer coverage levels within some of the other components of catch in terms of how you might think through the implications of that for data quality as it relates to establishing a basis for allocation of a subcomponent? In other words, if you have within the ground fish fishery, you have a certain level of observer coverage, but in some of these other components of catch, you may have a very different level of observer coverage from which to derive some estimate of catch. So has there been any thought about that yet or discussion at the committee level about how you might take that into consideration when you're framing up a sub-allocation of a fishery that could potentially have important implications for each of those components?
No, we have not had a chance to really dig into the details of, you know, what's the rate of coverage and how does that impact the sub-ACL or the development of that. Certainly, that has those discussions have gone on for other components previously. And I think at least for the northern windowpane flounder stock, one of the subcomponents that we'll be discussing is the scallop fishery.
Other questions, Rick?
Thanks. I can just follow. You know, I guess one area of concern I would have would be relative to the summer flounder fishery, just recognizing that that directed fishery is probably going to have a significantly lower rate of coverage. And I just wonder if you might anticipate that issue and begin to think about how that could be taken into consideration when you're trying to bound catch estimates or, you know, work with that uncertainty relative to how we understand catch that may be coming out of that component of the fishery before making an allocation. Thank you.
Other questions from the council? Ellen.
It's more a comment about the enforcement meeting.
Yeah, hang on to that thought. Are there any questions from the audience? Seeing none, we're back to the council and Frank.
Okay, thank you. This took quite a bit of discussion earlier today, so it'll be interesting. Move to consider an expanded seasonal spawning closure to protect codfish in the inshore Gulf of Maine in Framework 53. It passed the committee 11-0-0, and the only thing that the committee did not define was what an expanded area is.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. I'm going to go to Tom and then out to the audience.
I think some of you know this is coming because Jamie gave you a heads up at the Groundfish Committee meeting, so I don't want to disappoint anybody. I guess I'm a little troubled here with the process that's being followed, or rather the process that's not being followed with respect to spawning closures. And I'm going to be a little bit long-winded here just to remind everybody what we've done. In Amendment 16, we made some modifications to rolling closures. Some people call those spawning closures or claim that was the reason, though that's not really clear. But anyways, when those changes to the rolling closures were made, some direction was given to the PDT to try and examine spawning closures in the Gulf of Maine and come up with a new suite of spawning closures. We had some staff issues, some unsatisfactory performance by some people who used to work on the PDT, and that work was never done. And along about 2011, this was rolled into the habitat amendment where we decided we would address spawning closures in the omnibus habitat amendment. The closed area tech team did a whole lot of work with respect to spawning closures. They brought that to the committee, I think, I'm not going to get the year right, but I think it was actually in the spring of 2013. And for the most part, the combined groundfish and habitat committees were not really happy with, I think, the work that came out of the CAT with respect to the spawning closures. And so almost all of those spawning closure options were taken out of the habitat amendment. Over the course of the summer, spawning closures went back into the habitat amendment. And one in particular, we adopted one, I think, in the late, at some point, we added one in Mass Bay, a spawning closure in Mass Bay. About the same time, we went through priorities in 2013, and we identified working on groundfish spawning closures as something we wanted to do in the framework action in 2014. So then we put the spawning closure into the habitat amendment, and in April of 2014, we wanted to work on Framework 52. And so that was not identified as a priority to deal with the window pane of flounder AMs. And so we put it to the council to say, all right, if you're going to do Framework 52, what are you going to take outside out of Framework 53? And the answer was, we're not going to deal with spawning closures this year. We're going to move the spawning closures forward and make them a long-range, multi-year priority. So no sooner do we get Framework 52 wrapped up, or not actually wrapped up, we still have, Jamie still has about a month of work left to do on Framework 52, then we come back and we're trying to address spawning closures again in Framework 53, albeit perhaps not as broadly defined as spawning closures, but focusing on Gulf of Maine cod, not all the spawning closures. So, you know, if you think back to the Tiger Team report that we heard from in April, there was, you know, a comment made by the Tiger Team about how shifting priorities really kind of whipsaw the technical staff and try and figure out what they're supposed to do. And, you know, I hate to say it, but this is a prime example. We spent a lot of time just a few minutes ago working with Amendment 18 and expanding to some extent the work on Amendment 18 that's going to go on over the next couple months beyond what we expected. We had not planned to do the spawning closures in Framework 50, anything on spawning closures in Framework 53 this year, because we wanted to do Framework 52. That was a higher priority, and we were going to do it in Framework 53. So now we're potentially putting the plan development team in kind of a bind where they really do not have a whole lot of time to spend developing on additional spawning closures for Gulf of Maine cod. And I just hope you consider that as you consider this motion. I mean, ultimately, you need to decide what you think is the most important here on moving forward. But it's going to be a difficult lift for them at this late a date to start developing spawning closures while they're trying to do the work on Amendment 18, complete Framework 52, and some of the other items that were being brought up.
Comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. David.
Appreciate Tom's comments. Wish he had made those comments during the discussion on Amendment 18 and my motion relative to Gulf of Maine cod. But obviously, we didn't take action on, well, one of the reasons why we didn't take action on my motion earlier on relative to Amendment 18 was that we deal with it in the framework. We have a different situation now, I suspect, than what we had in the years gone by, in the months gone by, relative to the concerns you've expressed, Tom. You know, we have a groundfish fishery failure. The failure is due largely to the fact that we've lost our Gulf of Maine codfish, the tremendous slash in the Gulf of Maine cod quota, contributing to that, contributing to the problems of the industry itself. We, at our last meeting, noted that Amendment 18 would address potential concentrations of effort in the inshore Gulf of Maine and impacts on Gulf of Maine cod and other depleted stocks without reestablishing trip limits. So again, at the last meeting, we put the heavy emphasis on impacts of Gulf of Maine cod and the need to deal with effort on that cod through Amendment 18. We're not doing it through Amendment 18, except for the measures that we adopted for further work, and I consider them to be, well, we'll see if they prove to be effective. So I hear what you have to say, but there is a need to take further action on protection of spawning codfish in the Gulf of Maine, the inshore portion, that goes well beyond that which is in the omnibus amendment so far. a particular relatively small area in Cape Cod Bay, Mass Bay, that was implemented for a number of reasons, one being some major research is being done in that area right now, and there are some important spawning aggregations in that spot. So I'm sympathetic, but at the same time, to me, this is a major issue that relates to overall effort in the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine. And if we can deal with spawning closures through Framework 53, I think it'll go a long way towards enabling us to deal with some of the Amendment 18 issues.
Tom?
Thanks. I agree with a lot of what Dr. Pierce said with regards to the urgency of doing this. I also think that, you know, we have done, as Tom referenced, a tremendous amount of work on the spawning analysis that was presented. This would be a subset of that work, and I actually think that we could move pretty quickly, after what the CAT has put together. So I will continue to support including this in the framework. I think it's an urgent priority issue. And I think just about every commercial fisherman, every recreational fisherman recognizes the importance of codfish, recognizes the state of that resource and the importance of protecting spawners. I think this can and should be included in the framework and move quickly.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass.
Mike?
Yeah, I very much appreciate Tom's comments on this and the history of how we got to where we are and the just the workload issues. And I agree with him completely about that. I was having some of the same thoughts as we were going down this road. But in this case, given what we've heard about the situation with Gulf of Maine cod and the broad support from the industry itself for moving forward with some sort of closure, I will support the amendment, only under the presumption that the council, if we go forward and say we want this analyzed for amendment, or for Framework 53, is really serious about upholding what comes out of the PDT and voting for a substantial closure that will have teeth. None of us should vote in favor of this additional work unless we're committed to supporting a meaningful option that comes out the other end. I'm committed to that and will vote in favor of it for that reason.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The meeting that Tom referenced was May of 2013. And at that meeting, it was evident that that much of the work that's needed for this has been done already. The CAT did an enormous amount of work, and the motion, I believe it was Tom's motion at that meeting, said that that we would refer this not to the Habitat Amendment, but that it would be a priority in the next available groundfish action. And I believe that passed, if I recall correctly, and I have it in front of me. But we have, in that sense, we've committed ourselves to do this. The motion was taken. It was taken and passed at the time. Next, I believe it was even unanimous. Next available groundfish action. And we're there.
Tom?
So Dave's exactly right. That motion was passed, but then the council changed their mind in April when they voted to move it to a multi-year priority and not put it in the next action. The other thing I'm concerned about is, there was a lot of work done by the CAT, but there was a lot of resistance when that information was presented. So, it's not clear to me that, one option here is we go back and we bring back the alternatives that the CAT presented and we bring them in, because I don't know how far the analysis went, but at least a lot of the analysis went to develop them. I don't know how far the impacts analysis went. That's one of the options. But I'm concerned that if we do that, we're going to get the same reaction that we got before, which was nobody liked those areas. And so I'm not convinced that that work is directly translatable. I neglected to point out something else here that is just sort of a for-your information, is that if we modify the spawning closures through this action, it will likely have some impacts on the analysis in the Habitat Amendment, because it will revise or could revise what the no-action alternative is in the Habitat Amendment. So I don't know how all those moving pieces fit together exactly. It depends on which action gets approved when, but you just need to be aware of that as well.
Terry.
Yeah, I, to my recollection, I think what we had before us at the CAT, I don't think that we didn't like the analysis. It was just way too complex mixed with all the juvenile areas and all that stuff. I mean, that was my recollection, is that other people, and I mean, and we had, you know, redfish spawn and dab spawn, and we had all that. This is directly tied to Clickfish. So I think it should be a simpler look at a little piece of the ocean. So I think that's why we moved it out of the habitat amendment. So.
Any further comments? Jamie.
So just to be clear and just for the record, it was actually the February meeting this year when you initiated 52 where you wanted to work on the window pane revisions, which we took final action on today, that at the time you said that that was very important and you were willing to put spawning discussions on hold. I understand the rationale for wanting to talk about it now in 53, but I think you need to take, if this passes, you need to take a real hard look at what else is in 53 based on those discussions you had in February and expediting a framework over the last few months.
Doug?
That was a great segue because those were going to be my questions as to what is important here. Obviously, we have regulatory requirements that we have to do. So above the line there, that's in. I look at the regulatory management measures process. That was something that I brought up. I can see that waiting to another management action. I'm not quite clear on the addressing the enforcement concerns. I guess my question would be creating a rollover provision. If we didn't, what would be the consequences if we didn't have the rollover position, provision in this and we didn't have a specification in place for that particular for 2016?
Jamie?
No, you couldn't have directed fishing on that stock. But, you know, the other possibility would be to have another discussion about assessment timing for next year, but that would be something the council would have to have the council coordinating committee work on. And as far as I understand it, that schedule's been set for next year.
Yeah, I can add with great certainty there's not going to be any moving of the assessment schedule. So I ask the next question is creating a rollover provision, is that very much of a heavy lift and analysis in this? Or is it a fairly simple thing to just add it?
It could get complicated. And certainly we've had some discussion as to whether we'd want the SSC to weigh on it as well.
Tom?
Yeah, I think we've had a great discussion here about everything, you know, where how we got to this point with all the things that we want to address and where we are. I think the committee had a discussion about prioritizing those items. We can do what we can do. Jamie gets a ton done, but, you know, we're on notice that it might not be possible, will not be possible to get everything done, but we have a prioritized list now. I'm comfortable with that, and I continue to support including this. I think we can do it, and hopefully we can vote this up or down.
Ellen, you get last word.
Okay. I'm going to follow up on what Doug said and what we can get rid of and what we can't, and the address enforcement concerns of undersized fish through changes in gear regulations. When I asked the question to the Coast Guard at the enforcement meeting, how many people did they feel were were concerned in this issue, they had no idea. And I asked them if it met the point to which you need to re-gear the entire fleet for a few people that are not obeying the law. I think that we need to find out a little bit more about that, and I think that that is something that should be put off and discussed by the whole council in a lot more detail. So I think that that could be taken right off the list.
Okay. We've had robust discussion here, using Mr. Dempsey's words. Jamie.
I'm sure you'll continue to discuss this after this motion, but the one thing that hasn't really been discussed by anyone here is the revision of the carryover provisions, and we do think that that will take a considerable amount of time and effort. So, again, as you're deciding how to go with this, I think you then need to examine some of those other issues. Having them on the prioritized list, I understand that, but taking them off and maybe bringing them up under priorities might be a better approach to make sure the things that you have prioritized at the top of the list actually have more time and energy committed to them.
With that sage advice, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? Motion carries 14-1-1. Frank?
Nearing the end. Okay. Motion to include in Framework 53 an alternative to address issues regarding the inappropriate manipulation of mobile gear to target smaller fish. This change would require all twine behind the tapered part of the net belly to be 6.5 inches. This would include a lengthener and the cod end. 11-0-0.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read this language, I just had a question about the twine, and it's, you know, the question I had was whether it needed to be exactly 6.5 inches or a minimum of 6.5 inches. I mean, it seemed unlikely that that the measurement would be coincident with the exact number. So was that a minimum?
The intent was to be the minimum.
Ellen?
At the groundfish meeting, I asked some of the ground fishermen if this would be a cost to the fishing community, and I was told no. I went home, and I had an entire fleet screaming at me. The Coast Guard at our enforcement committee meeting said that there was not any flexibility in the twine measurement. If it says 6.5, it has to be 6.5. So you cannot use an old belly that may have shrunk that you had before. You're going to have to buy new twine. On top of that, my question was, how prevalent is this issue? And we didn't have an answer for that. I feel like there are other ways to punish the people who are breaking the law than punishing the entire fleet. And I'm very concerned about this. I am going to vote against it, and I think you're going to have a huge amount of discussion when this comes up, if this passes.
Doug?
Well, this is where I'm going to start lopping off, because we voted in spawning closures on this. I'm going to vote against this just because of the extra time commitment on it. And hopefully this could be taken up at a future management action.
Tom.
Thanks. I brought this motion to the committee, and as I think was said earlier, it passed, I think, unanimously. And that is because a lot of people recognize the importance of doing everything we can to make sure that our gear regulations are enforceable and that our that nobody's taking advantage to manipulate their gear to change the selectivity of their trawl inappropriately. And it has been raised by a number of folks. As Ellen said, there's a lot of people with a lot to say on it. That will be part of developing the alternative and part of the development of the framework. I think it's important enough to move forward on. I don't think it will require a tremendous amount of work, but there will be analysis about the costs. So it's been brought up to me by a number of folks who are concerned about this practice, and that's basically choking off the cod end and, in effect, making the lengthener piece or the extender a de facto smaller cod end. And it's happening enough that some mobile gear fishermen are concerned about it, and this is one way that's enforceable that the Coast Guard said they could, as I understand it from the Enforcement Committee, and maybe Terry could speak to this, the discussion there was that a change like this would be enforceable and would help address the issue. And one of the issues that we have with regards to how many people are doing this is the chance of getting caught doing it is effectively zero or pretty close to zero. And that's, we can't use that all the time as a justification not to make some reasonable changes in how we handle this. So I think it can and should be done, and I think Framework 53 is the right spot.
Terry.
Well, I would defer to the Coast Guard on that. He did say that it was impossible at the Coast Guard, so I would defer to him on that.
Commander.
Yes, I agree. It is enforceable. We can enforce it. It's doable at sea with minimal changes to our training program. I don't know how prevalent it is, as Ellen mentioned, because these things are very difficult to catch. It's just one line. It's usually tied in with a piece of small stuff we suspect that can break under tension. So basically, once you fish with the net for a little while, it fixes itself and technically is legal, right, once the piece of small stuff breaks. So this provision would, I think, take away that incentive or that effective small cod end. So it is enforceable, but I can't speak to how prevalent it is because we have not caught very many of these. So,
is there further discussion? Mary Beth.
So I just have a question for, fishermen at the table. If this is going to be a significant expense, isn't there still a way, if somebody wanted to do it, to manipulate the gear and still achieve the same result, even if you implement this? I mean, people were I don't know enough about the gear, but, I think there were references to choking off part of the net and whatever. So perhaps somebody could address that. Because if it's really costly and really not going to fix the problem, I do have to wonder.
Terry.
Well, there's always a way to cheat. you'll never stop somebody who wants to cheat. I'm not so sure how costly it would be. It would be a lengthener piece. I don't know what the cost per lengthener piece is.
A couple
hundred dollars. It's good if you build it yourself or not, and so the way the net is configured comes down at a taper in the belly, and then your caught in length of piece is square. So it tapers in, and then your caught in length of piece is square. I suppose in theory. And that's all usually made out of double twine all the way, you're caught in length of a piece. In theory, I guess you could choke off the belly because that's going to be 6 inch at that point. But I think that would chafe out awful fast. And you'd get a hole in it. So, I don't feel passionate one way or the other. I think it would be an easy thing to enforce. And it could discourage the guys that are doing it. So,
this is an alternative, if you pass it, that will go out for public comment. So I'm going to David and Ellen, and we're going to move the question.
Yeah, I support the motion. I think the motion is also consistent with concern expressed by Garfo in written correspondence to the council a few months ago, where concern was expressed that it appeared that market category for even smaller fish was expanding, that more smaller fish were being landed, there was a suspicion on the part of Garfo, and I can't remember the exact words that were offered up by your office, John, but you alerted us to the fact that there could be a real problem here. I don't believe we acted on that. This is one way to respond in a way that is sensitive to the fact that there is a lot of incentive, I suspect, for fishermen to choke off their cod ends, considering the reduction in the minimum sizes for some of the key ground fish stocks.
Ellen, last word.
The answer to Mary Beth's question is we looked at the design, and all you have to do is move where you've got the choker line in what is proposed, and it's not going to fix the problem. It's just going to change how the people who are breaking this law are dealing with it. And my suggestion at enforcement was that we request that NOAA enforcement, if they do find anyone doing this, throw the book at them. And I think that another option would be to target those people that you think are breaking this law with a huge number of observers. There are other ways to deal with this rather than punishing the entire fleet.
Okay. I'm going to move the question. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 10 to 5. 10-5-1. Frank.
Okay. To initiate Framework 53 to identify issues. Whoop. Tom?
Tom.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Okay. What was it? To initiate Framework 53 and identify the issues to be included as those recommended by the Ground Fish Committee at its June 9th, 2014 meeting.
Is that your motion or committee motion?
I need a second, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Back in black. Tom. Is there any discussion? Jamie.
So as I mentioned, based on these last two motions, now that slide number 4, everything on that list is what is being contemplated for inclusion on 53, and we've offered our plea that it's going to be very difficult to do all of these things, submit 52, complete work on Amendment 18. Is there anything that you're willing to take out at this time? Because it would really help move those things forward that you have on the highest priority in this framework action.
I heard from members of the committee speak very deliberately that the list was prioritized. So if you were, my suggestion would be, and I would stand corrected by any member of the committee and the council, if you have to start calling from the bottom of the list. Mary Beth.
Just a question for Jamie. I think, did you make a recommendation on one issue that you thought maybe could come out? I wasn't sure there. I mean, you didn't just this moment, but several times ago when you were speaking.
I did mention that there was limited discussion today on the carryover provisions, and that when this did come up, that we should discuss whether or not that was something the council was interested in pursuing, since it would be quite an involved discussion.
So if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, but I guess I would look around the table and ask, you know, people on the Ground Fish Committee, how important is that item? I don't personally have a sense.
Frank?
I'll defer to the committee.
Everyone's getting low energy right now. Tom can weigh in, and Mike, and then we still have one more fairly contentious agenda item to deal with today.
So I don't know if anybody in the public wants to weigh in on this as well. I mean, the issue here is that the carryover provisions that we adopted in Amendment 16 have been, I don't know if I'd say completely overturned, but certainly modified quite a bit by a court case that we lost with respect to the carryover provisions. And the agency has modified the carryover provisions quite a bit in order to comply with the order in that court case. And it's so there have been a lot of changes to the carryover provisions that have been made as a result of that court decision. And I don't know whether the committee and the council are satisfied with those carryover provisions or whether they think that needs to be addressed in this framework action.
Mike.
Yeah, I would not give that a very high priority from what little I understand of it, but my concern about the prioritized list is the fourth item on the list is to create the rollover provision for specifications, which strikes me, if the line gets drawn at three, the fishery ends. So I would presume that would be the first item on the list, not the fourth. Beyond that, I could see some of the lower items dropping off if that's the way the priorities work out.
Other comments? Doug?
Yeah, I would suggest and make a motion that we revise the list of priorities to move, create a rollover provision ahead of revised carryover provisions.
Is second by Terry? Is there any need for discussion? Those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 15-0. We're back to the main motion as amended.
So what I'm going to recommend is that we modify this to initiate a framework adjustment 53 and identify issues to be included as those recommended by Groundfish Committee in order of priority. At its June 9th meeting, and that the PDT have the discretion to stop work on to do these particular address the measures in the list in order of priority that we have there, and if they get to a point where they're not going to be able to, I'm trying to get them so that they can say we can't go any farther and we may have to drop off some. Have the PDC discretion to discontinue work on issues identified on the lower part of the list if time does not allow. At any place, and that includes some of the ones that are listed in priority there.
Is there a second? Second? Second by Tom, and then want to go to Jamie.
I'll be funny for a minute. If this motion passes, can the PDT chair then use the discretion right away?
Yeah.
You've talked a lot about the list. You've talked a lot about what's now the three most important things on your list. And those three most important things are not trivial. They are allocate the windowpane flounder ACL and subcomponents and develop AMs for both stocks. Expand the Gulf of Maine inshore spawning closure. That is critical to you, as you've described it. And then this third one is this rollover provision for specs. Are those top three issues enough? And are you willing today to say, let's work on those. These are still important. Let's talk about them in priorities.
Tom.
I like the motion as written. I think you could stop and discontinue work. I mean, we're basically giving the staff the permission not to do the impossible, right? If they can't do it, it's not going to get done. So I just think if it can't happen, you know, keeping this list complete and prioritized allows us to, you know, opportunistically take care of a number of important issues. So I can support this, gets the framework up and off the ground, and we have a lot of important issues here.
Matt?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I agree with Tom, and just as a member of the committee speaking for myself, I mean, if those are the three things that get done, I'd be happy to talk about moving the other things off. I can't speak for the rest of the committee, but those are my thoughts.
Mike?
I guess I can support the motion, but I do think that it has to be clear that it's the prioritized list as amended in this meeting, which it doesn't say that there. So with that addition, I can support it.
I agree. John?
Jamie, would you read that top three? It's three that get done. That's what you're saying. Would you read those three again?
Yeah, those three that are everyone's most interested are allocate the window pane fund or ACL to subcomponents and develop AMs for bull stocks, expand the Gulf of Maine cod inshore spawning closure, and then creating a rollover provision for specifications. Those are the top three. And the reason why those are the top three is that list three and four changed position based on the previous motion.
Tom.
I'm glad to hear there's all kinds of support for the PDT and the PDT chair deciding on this list of priorities. I just hope that support continues when they come back and tell you that they didn't get them all done.
On the motion to amend, those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. Is 15 opposed? Abstaining? Mary Beth, are you? Did you vote? Okay. Motion carries 16-0. We're back to the main motion as amended. Bonnie, you had your hand up. Do you want to speak on the main motion as amended? No? Okay. Okay, those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. The motion carries 16-0. Frank, bring us home.
Okay. What just happened? Okay, other business in the committee. Contingent on the final results of the SARC 59 stock assessment of Gulf of Maine Haddock, the Oversight Committee recommends that the Council authorize the Council Chair to request an emergency action to modify the Gulf of Maine Haddock ACL for fishing year 2014 to request an in-season adjustment to the recreational fishery accountability measures for Gulf of Maine Haddock. Pass the committee 911.
Before we go to the audience, Tom?
I'm going to continue my cold shower reputation here. I just want to make sure I understand the language in the motion. The language in the motion is nonspecific. I guess the first thing here is that there's a memo in your binder that points out that we've had a working group meeting for the assessment. None of those results are final. None of those results are final until the SARC. Things could dramatically change. I personally think it's bad practice to be making conclusions or making recommendations based on incomplete information from a SAW working group. But this kind of gets around that by giving the authority to the chair to wait until the final report comes in. But I just want to make sure I understand the language of the motion clearly, that should, and admittedly this seems to be unlikely based on the preliminary information from the working group, but it appears that presumably the chair is to request an emergency action should the assessment come in and it's a big surprise and it indicates that a lower ABC is supported, because this just asks for a modification. It just doesn't ask for an increase. Now, I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but because we don't really expect that to happen, but I want to point out that it does seem somewhat inconsistent to be ready, willing, and able to ask for modifications in an ABC when we see increases, but be very hesitant to do that should we get an assessment that comes in that's bad information that suggests there should be a decrease in an ABC in season.
We'll go to the audience first. Any comments from the audience? Jim.
I'd look at this just the opposite way, that if you have information that the data that you're operating under is wrong or, it's not correct, you have an obligation to make an adjustment based on new information that would take take some of these people off their knees. This is serious. You know, we know that the stock is higher than what people are thinking it is. So I support the motion, but I don't know what you're doing with commercial up there. Has that already been dealt with? Not just recreational. It just says recreational.
The,
right?
The GOM Haddock ACL for fishing year 2014.
Okay, thank you.
Further comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised at my comments on emergency action. But I do want to ask the service. In 2010, the service was able to, based on the SARC, did a mid-season adjustment without a formal request from the council for emergency action. So is that still something that can be done this time?
Well, the council always can ask the agency for an emergency action. I think with Pollock, it was a different situation. I think, there was, at the time, I think the agency was trying to do a lot to support the industry. Not that they don't want to anymore, of course, but it's, when it's always one way, I think it is somewhat problematic. I think that's what Tom was trying to point out, so... It always helps to get a council recommendation.
Gene.
Right, I just want to clarify. You don't have to have a council. The agency can act on its own for emergency actions. I'm not sure. Is this motion asking for an emergency, or is it it just says it's authorizing the council chair to request an emergency. Does that mean when the results of the assessment comes, the chair himself can request it rather than the council at that time?
That was the intent.
By what? Sending a letter or something?
I mean, what the motion is designed to do, because we don't have the final assessment information here now, the motion is designed to try and cut down the time between when the assessment results will be available and when the council can request an emergency
right,
action.
Right, but it won't be done by, a vote,
It'll be done by...
This anticipates a vote so that if there's a majority, in requesting, if the council requests an emergency, the provision in the Madison Act anticipates a vote, because if it's unanimous, then we have to do it. So you're going to be requesting, the chair's going to be requesting an emergency without a vote at the time, without knowing what the specifics are for the request, and there's no way of determining whether it's a majority vote or something less than a majority vote, which triggers different reactions from the agency. I mean, this is not the way emergency, it's meant to be a vote of the council, not a request by a council chair to effectuate an emergency.
Sorry, the process issue we're trying to get around here, or I shouldn't say get around isn't the right term. The process issue we're trying to address here is that we don't have any guarantee that the agency would take action on its own should the assessment results be positive. That's somewhat different than the indications we got from the agency where the Pollock assessment was completed in the first week of 2010, and a week later at a groundfish committee meeting, the agency representative told us that the agency was prepared to act on that. So the issue we're struggling with here is that the assessment meeting is in mid-July, roughly. The report will probably be available I don't know, mid-August at the earliest, maybe late August. And the council meeting doesn't follow until the end of September, first week of October. So, you know, the idea here is that by authorizing the chair to request the emergency action, assuming that this passes, that we cut the timeline between when the assessment results are available, when we get that request in, and when the agency may be willing to react to that. Now, if I were the agency, I would look at this and say, I don't have a unanimous vote in front of me, so I'm not required to implement the emergency action. But you could consider the request from the chair.
And why to the chair instead of the executive committee or the chair of the council are you delegating this authority? I mean, why is it being delegated down? And also, apparently, this question was raised earlier. If by you, Tom, if it worse, if it shows that there should be a further reduction, is it at the chair's discretion whether he requested at that point in time to reduce catch levels, or is he only act if it's an increase?
Well, I think that's an issue that the council should address, which is why I asked the question, because the motion is unclear. I think if the council wants to be specific one way or the other, they should address that in the language of this motion, my opinion.
Right. I mean, one way of asking it is, does he have discretion, or is it going to be an objective black and white criteria that he must act under?
Yeah. But I don't know.
I just think this is a bad way to do business.
Right.
You're anticipating an emergency. There's theoretically the council could initiate a framework today and have a council committee meeting and a final council meeting in September. This is just undermines the whole idea of emergencies because it's anticipating something that you don't know is going to happen. And it's delegating unclear, maybe you can clarify it, unclear authority to a chair of a committee. I just think you need to think long and hard about this.
Right. So, I think the argument would be that we're not actually anticipating the emergency. The emergency exists. The groundfish disaster exists. We know that. We've tried to take mitigation measures. But the opportunity for relief is something that we anticipate happening that we don't know yet.
Tom Dempsey.
Thanks. I guess we could avoid all of this and address Gene's concerns if NIMS would just tell us that a request is good enough and we don't need to call it an emergency action. They did it with Pollock without an emergency action. I'd prefer they do it here without an emergency action. I don't see at all how the Pollock precedent doesn't apply. We're still pressed, right? We have new information. We anticipate having peer-reviewed information that can actually provide some increase. And to the point of whether it's an increase or decrease, we've talked quite a bit about that. I mean, the issue is you can't drop a quota mid-year because some people have caught, this is an allocated stock, right? So some people will have caught that fish. Other people would have held their quota back. So if you cut it mid-year, you have disproportionate impacts on a whole bunch of people based on their business plan. So that's why NIMS has said a number of times, we're comfortable increasing an ACL mid-year. We're not comfortable decreasing an ACL mid-year. We'll do it at the start of the next fishing year. And that's just the reality of this type of allocated fishery and people making different decisions. So if NIMS was prepared to say, once we get this peer-reviewed information, a letter from the council is good enough and we don't need to pursue emergency action, then that sounds great to me. Short of that, I think we should be ready to put an emergency action request forward. And the discretion, whether you can change the word authorize or authorize at the discretion of the chair, or if it works better to send it to the executive committee, I'm not sure it would. I don't know if that substantively changes the approach, but either of those things I think are open to, but either NIMS can tell us that they'll do this on their own or I think this makes sense. And we anticipate having information that we will not be able to respond to in a timely way because of how our meetings work.
John.
I am supportive of this effort, although I will vote against it because I vote against emergency actions. So the secretary can have the final word on this, but I am supportive of the direction where we're going. Let me tell you my rationale, and I leave the legal arguments to our excellent lawyer. Here's the way I see it, and emphasize this is not the legal way, but Gene has said we don't need an action from the council in order to act on an emergency action. We can do that on our own if it's warranted. So if the situation's warranted, we can act without any action by the council. Okay. So if there's a report in August that shows either a significant increase in Gulf of Maine haddock that would warrant granting relief, my feeling would be that warrants emergency action because that's unanticipated and we should grant relief as soon as we can. And I hope that's the case. If it shows a tremendous decline, then as Jim Odlin said, if you get new information, you should act in either direction quickly. But I hope it's the other way around. And I think we did that on winter flounder last year. With new information, we went up. And you should do that quickly. So as Gene said, we can do that without any request from the council. What I see up on the board is a delegation of authority to the chair. Now, you could also delegate to the executive committee if you wanted, but you're delegating to the chair because it's easier for the chair to call a meeting of himself. And he can look at the results of the report, and he could say, oh, it's status quo. I guess this isn't doesn't warrant emergency action. I'm not going to write a letter. Or he could look at it and come to whatever conclusion and decide whether or not a communication to the regional office is necessary. You're saying to the chair, use your judgment on this when you get the results. We trust you to use your judgment. That's what I see this motion as. Again, we don't need that communication. If the information warrants emergency action, we can take that action ourselves. But if we get a letter from the chair on your behalf, it says, okay, well, we don't need that, but it's helpful information because it represents the thinking of the council because you've delegated that authority. It's not a legal requirement, but it's useful information. So I think that's why I'm saying it's not a legal argument, really, but it's helpful information. So I think I'm supportive of the effort. It does shorten it. If you get information, the idea, we're going to get the information in August. If it shows a tremendous increase, we want to be able to act quickly on that information. I think we all do. That's what we're trying to get at here.
Okay, Mike, Laura, Mary Beth, and Jim.
Yes, just to get some clarification. So what Tom said was the assessment report would be available in August. Our council meeting's roughly a month later, so we're talking about a month difference. I'm trying to recall when the SSC is scheduled to meet. Is there an intention that an assessment would come out, the SSC would see it before the chairman acts, or are we leaving the SSC out of this, which strikes me as not a particularly good precedent on the part of the council process? Thank you.
So I hope Gene's paying attention because I want to make sure I don't misspeak. But my recollection is that when the emergency action for Pollock resulted in a change to the Pollock ACL, that we did not have the SSC meet to set a new ABC. So it also cut that step out. Now, I don't know if Gene wants to weigh in on why that was, but that's the way it went.
Jim, you've had your hand up for a while.
Well, I have a few things that are all related to this. First is the clarification of when the stock assessment will take place and when we'll get the results. The assessment is in the third week of July, and we'll be getting reports, written summary report from the review panel in mid-August, and individual reports from the panelists the week after that. And then we've typically looked at the summary report from the panel as our main guide as to whether the assessment is accepted or not and what the results are. And we've worked with the council to try to release a pre-publication copy of the results as quickly as we can, trying to maintain our quality control to make sure the numbers that we provide are correct and we won't have to come back to you a month later and say that we got it wrong. So you have to respect the quality control aspect of this as well. So that's the timeline. Since I'm the chairman of the peer review process, I just ask that some cooperation between the councils and the Science Center on this. We're going to be entering into the peer review, and in these cases, I'm very concerned that the peer review process follow all the steps that it's intended to follow, that we need to have good scientific practice. And when, for instance, at the start of the peer review, we provide all the working papers to everyone, and we announce that those are working papers that have no official status with our agency. And I always ask people to try to respect that and not to run to the newspapers immediately and release the results when they are, in fact, preliminary. So that's the sort of thing that I hope everybody, since there's clearly a lot of public attention on this assessment, that you work with us to respect the peer review process so that we don't end up with anything analogous to a mistrial, where I want this peer review process to go off smoothly and correctly so that we can provide you with the results. So that's the end of my comment.
Laura. Mayor Beth.
So several people have spoken since Gene last spoke, and so I just would ask if he still holds that opinion that he last shared with us. Well, that this may not be the right process. That we might not be able to do it this way without a vote on an emergency action.
No, I didn't say you couldn't do it.
Okay.
I just said that it makes it unclear as to whether it's actually an anticipated type of emergency request under the Magnuson Act provision. You can always do it. We can assess. As John said, we can do this on our own. We don't need your recommendation. I still think there's some real questions about what kind of discretion you're giving to the chair on this. I mean, if it's a 1% difference, is he supposed to write the letter? Or does it have to be a 10% difference? If it goes down, what happens? I really think this is a very bad precedent for the council to set, to start just delegating these kinds of very controversial, important decisions to a chair without any specific guidance. It doesn't meet up with any specific procedure in the Magnuson Act. It hasn't been done this way before that I know of.
Terry.
I would just say 1% can let us go fishing. So if it's 1%, we ask for it. If it's 2%, we ask for it. And I think it's important. We're going to have a peer-reviewed process. Everything will be on the up and up before they actually raise it. So I think we're overcomplicating this. I mean, I just think we're overcomplicating it. Seriously.
Tom, Matt, and let's move the question.
Well, I guess I still don't have an answer to the question I asked. If we change this to take out reference to emergency action and just deferred to our chairman to send a letter requesting action following that, you guys have said multiple times, multiple different ways, you don't need a request, you'd like one, so we'll have a request from the council, and you can do it anyways on your own. I guess if the process is problematic in terms of deference to the chair, just have them send a letter. We don't need an emergency action. You've told us several different ways that you don't need that, and you could do it on your own, and, in fact, you're willing to do that. So avoid the the issue. If NIMS thinks that's appropriate, I'm happy to amend this motion to just task or request the chair send a letter, not make an emergency action request.
Your mic, Gene.
Sorry. The only way we can do this is by emergency. You keep saying we don't really need an emergency to do this. We do need an emergency justification to do it, which I have to. I want to respond a little bit to John's characterization. We would have to still decide that this is an emergency that couldn't have been anticipated in order to justify this. So. I'm not going to make the judgment as to whether we've made that decision or not. But
sorry, my proposed path would just avoid the process issues that you had addressed. Deferring to the chair, it would just be a slightly different process. It would still obviously require emergency action on your part. It would also demonstrate our support for that emergency action, but it would sort of address some of your concerns about how we would handle that. If that alone would get us there and would be considered by the regional administrator and others to prompt action, then let's do that.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm seeing a nightmare scenario emerging here. We've got strong recommendations from Gene that this is something that we need to be very, very thoughtful about and whether or not it's the right way to go. I agree with Mike that this is a lousy precedent for doing business. We're raising expectations on a fleet that needs help, and we don't even have a peer-reviewed stock assessment yet. Let's say the good news does come down, and because of some of the legal issues that have been made clear here today, the relief that they could get is actually delayed further. That's what frightens me about this, that by cutting corners, we're actually going to prolong the amount of time that we can get some relief to this industry. I'm going to vote against this because for all the reasons that have been stated before, and I just think we're raising expectations unnecessarily, and it could actually wind up being worse.
Tom.
So, I guess I'm turning to Gene. Gene has raised some concerns about process questions and sending this to the chair. And Tom made a suggestion, so I'm just trying to put words on Tom's suggestion perhaps. If this motion, for example, was modified, or if the council decided to just send a letter now to the regional office saying, we urge you to consider modifying the Gulf of Maine Haddock ACL, should the results of the assessment support an increased quota? That seems to dodge some of the process questions, perhaps. It doesn't perhaps raise to the level of a formal request from the council for an emergency action, but it gets the point across and maybe tap dances around some of your process issues.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that is a little more straightforward. It does alleviate a little bit of my concern. It's sort of my advice to the council and how they do business, that you're better off doing that, because I still think you need to clarify this. The way this reads, it doesn't say if it goes up or down what you're supposed to do. It suggests that if it goes down, you need an emergency. If it goes up, you need an emergency to either tighten or alleviate the restrictions. And I think it would be very helpful to make that clear if you did decide to go with Tom's suggestion to just make the request now.
John.
I think that, as Gene said, we do have to justify that it's an emergency. And so whether it's in the motion or not, even though I said I have to vote against the motion, I think the letter to us, to the extent that it builds the case for the emergency, is very helpful to us. So, again, whether it's in the motion or not, the letter to us making the case for the emergency, that's very helpful.
Tom.
then I would move, as it says up there, to request now to urge NMFS to send a letter now urging NMFS to modify to, in the case of peer-reviewed information with regards to the GOM haddock that results in a significant quota increase or results in a quota increase that would increase opportunities for the fleet. I sort of feel like we're writing a letter in the motion, but I mean we're sending a letter now to John Bullard outlining the case for urgent action.
Laura, are you going to second it? All right. Okay, I'm going to put a 5-minute deadline on the comments on this, and we're going to move on. John, Frank, Mike, you all got a minute and a half apiece.
The advantage of the first motion was that you had information, hypothetically, of the report. And so there was a condition that existed of a higher amount of fish. You knew some information. You could then say an emergency exists because there's a larger amount of fish. You can't say that now. If you write a letter now, you can't say that. So that's the reason I think your motion, Tom, is a little bit weaker. It has the advantage of it's the whole council, but you can't say there's more fish. So that's why I'd suggest the first course of action rather than the second one.
Frank?
Well, I'll be voting against the first one if it comes up, but I'm going to quote in a letter that John has already sent the council, and I know it wasn't about the whole, but it says, we plan to review the Gulf of Maine haddock assessment results when they become available, and we will be prepared to respond as needed. He's already sent the council that letter. I don't think we have to do anything.
Mike?
I don't think we do either, but I think this sort of letter just reinforcing, saying we're on the same page, we want to see you pursue that, front end loading our intent is good. I also think that if the assessment comes out, whenever the assessment comes out, at some point the SSC should see it, but we should be expecting that if it in fact shows the positive results that we would like, we would actually take a formal action at our September meeting. But the idea behind this letter would be that this process would start rolling even before we have to take that action so as to minimize any delay. So I would support this letter. I probably wouldn't support a request for an emergency action, which is unspecified in terms of the substance of it. Thank you.
Tom, you've just modified your motion.
Just trying to clarify the motion. To include the recreational AMs, that portion of it, I didn't want that to get left behind, so we're just trying to put that text from the original motion in the second. I don't think that should come as a concern, but maybe with the consent of my seconder. So just trying to clean that up to make sure we say everything that needs to be said, but hopefully we can pass this, send a strong signal that we all support action, and we get that done.
Is there need for any further comment? Okay. On the motion to amend, those supported, please indicate so. And those who are abstaining. Are you abstaining or voting no, John? Okay. The motion carries 15-1. The main motion as amended, same sign. Those support it? And those who are opposed? Okay, the motion carries 15-1. Is there any further business from the Ground Fish Committee?
That's it, unless we're starting Framework 54.
Car 54, where are you? Yeah. Okay, Jamie.
I didn't get a chance to jump in before, but I just want to thank the council for providing the PDT with the discretion for 53. It will be difficult for us to work on Amendment 18 and 53 and submit 52, so thank you very much for allowing us that flexibility.
Yeah, and thank you, Jamie, and the PDT for all the work you've been doing. Tom, you want the last word? almost last word.
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody that we are having a habitat session upstairs. If you'd like to learn more about the habitat amendment, this is intended primarily to help the public understand the amendment, ask questions of Michelle, learn about the analyses, learn about the alternatives. It's upstairs on the first floor in the Massachusetts room. I'm going to say there are refreshments. I just won't tell you what kind, because there are. But you're all welcome to attend.
And for the alternative refreshment, room 1122 in about 10 minutes.
Yes.